You're listening to podcasts from the Congressional Internet Caucus Advisory Committee, www.netcaucus.org.
Thank you all for joining us. My name is Roger Cocchetti. I'm with RJC Associates, and on behalf of the Internet Education Foundation, you're joining us in a panel discussion about the future of ICANN and Internet governance. So if you're interested in privacy or another topic, you've got the wrong room. But if this is the topic, this is the place. We have a very distinguished and, I think, well-informed panel assembled to discuss this topic. I think, as everyone knows, we have a mere 60 minutes to cover quite a lot of territory. So I'm going to have to keep the panel discussion and the audience conversation moving. I will briefly introduce our four panelists and make a few opening remarks, most of which are designed to educate those of you in the room who are not well informed about the topics of this panel. And in noting that, I should also note that I have asked the panelists, and you will find me as well, directing our comments towards people who are not well informed on this topic. So that means for those of you who have joined us who are well informed in the topic, you will often find my comments and the comments of the panelists primitive and to some extent inaccurate because they have been reduced to a level that a person who hasn't spent a great deal of time dealing with this subject can grasp. So apologies to those of you who know the subject backwards and forwards, but our main audience in today's conversation is to educate newcomers to the topic and educate newcomers to the different perspectives people have on this subject. I'm going to sort of just introduce our panelists all at once and explain that they'll each make opening remarks of 4 or 5 minutes. I apologize for my pen tapping the microphone, but we have such limited time that if you hear me doing that, it means it's sort of a warning to the speaker that we need to keep moving. I won't even tell you what happens if they keep going much longer after my tapping starts, but we do have a limited amount of time. Also, one other housekeeping matter, and Tim and the people managing the conference have asked me to tell all of you that we're going to do our best to sort of finish this panel discussion 5 minutes early, so you have time to get to the lunch. The lunch is downstairs where the morning session was. And it's a self-seating lunch, and it will be followed by at coffee and dessert, the two lunchtime speakers. So let me begin by introducing the four panelists. Immediately to my left, Jeff Brueggemann is with ATT and manages ATT's interests in these areas. Steve Del Bianco is with NetChoice and has a broad interest in lots of IT issues, including this one. Paul Levins is with ICANN, and I'll define what that acronym means in just a minute, but obviously is here on behalf of that organization. And Everton Lucero is with the Embassy of Brazil and similarly has a broad area of interest of which this is an important piece. In setting the framework for this conversation, I thought it might be useful to sort of take note of the fact that for those of you who have worked with me in the past, you probably know that up until about 5 or 6 years ago, it was an area that I'd spent a fair amount of time on. And for the past 5 or 6 years, have been working on a variety of IT industry issues, including workforce and small business and other broad IT industry issues that have kept me only slightly in contact with this topic. And the experience for those interested in this topic was useful because it gave me some perspective. As I explained to the panelists through dozens of times over the last few years, I've had to try to explain what the subject of Internet governance or ICANN or IANA is to a room full of people who hadn't the slightest idea what I was talking about and forced me and I think hopefully the panel to try to address complicated and very important issues to people who have not spent a lot of time preparing for it. Anyway, having said that, I'm just going to go through a number of terms that will be used during the panel discussion so each panelist doesn't have to define them. Again, my apologies to those of you who are more expert than I or any of the panelists, because you're going to find that in oversimplifying the definitions, I lose something in accuracy, but hopefully make the conversation flow. First, one term commonly used is top-level domain, TLD. A top-level domain is something like .com, .net, .org. It is a domain in the Internet, and people often refer to TLDs, of which there are many different types. The two of the more prominent are GTLDs, generic top-level domains, and CCTLDs, country code top-level domains. A GTLD is a .com or a .net or a .org. It's generic in nature, and a CCTLD is a .us or a .uk or a .fr, representing particular countries. IDNs are a different type of domain name. It's called internationalized domain names. It reflects a movement that's been afoot for a long time, but gathered steam, I would say, in the past 6 or 7 years to create top-level domains that are internationalized, either in the character set or in the formatting or whatever way it's done. There are different techniques. One of the topics of the panel specifically refers to ICANN, the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers. ICANN is a California-based nonprofit organization that has a contract with the United States government, in particular the Department of Commerce, under which it has assumed responsibility for the management of top-level domains and other central administrative functions of the Internet. The IGF is the Internet Global Forum, it is a body, a United Nations body that was created at the conclusion of the World Summit on the Information Society, itself often called WISIS. The World Summit on the Information Society was a UN conference, much like the major UN conferences they've done in the past on everything from the environment to population to whatever, and the UN did a conference on information society, at the conclusion of which it called for the creation of this UN forum on Internet governance. IANA is the Internet Assigned Numbering Authority.
Numbers Authority.
Yep. Did I get that right?
Numbers Authority.
And it is responsible for the issuance of IP addresses, number blocks of IP addresses, and the management of the IP addressing system. Not to get too technical, but the IP addressing system is what underlies the domain name system and is roughly comparable to the telephone number system that we're all familiar with, and it essentially permits everyone to get from here to there on the Internet because there are numbers associated with origination and termination points. The ITU is the International Telecommunications Union. It is one of the UN specialized agencies located in Geneva. It has, as the name implies, responsibility for telecommunications. Somewhat unusual, although not unique in the UN system, it has a robust network of involvement of the private sector, so it's not simply or only a group of governments sitting around meeting with each other. It has a variety of working groups and study groups and sessions that are designed to involve the private sector. That's kind of a panoply of jargon that you'll hear in the discussion. I'm sure there will be others, and again, apologies for oversimplifying some of these. I would Also make one other important point. As I said at the beginning, we're really talking about two topics in this panel discussion. So I've asked each panelist to address either the subject of internet governance or the subject of ICANN or both. And roughly speaking, to distinguish them, internet governance is a term that is generally used to describe a whole wide range of activities that have the effect of creating rules for conduct on or the operation of the internet. So arguably you could include in a discussion of internet governance everything from organizations that promote best practices or self-regulation or technology tools or consumer education or deal with topics as diverse as content and privacy or whatever. They all really, I think, properly fit in a medium like the internet in a discussion of internet governance. A piece of the internet governance puzzle is ICANN, which, as I noted before, has fairly specific responsibilities for the management of central administrative functions of the internet, most notably domain names and IP addresses. So these are related but distinct topics, and each panelist is free to address either or both, but they'll need to do so within the time limits they have. So with that introduction, let me ask Jeff to begin.
Thank you very much, Roger, and thanks for the introduction. That was very helpful. What I want to do is to focus on AT&T's participation in internet governance as a way to take this large topic and bring it down to a more specific level. And discussions of internet governance tend to focus, and Roger, you kind of touched on this, sometimes it's about process and the relative roles and responsibilities of the various organizations that may be involved in internet governance. I think from our perspective, a key aspect of that is you think about the global internet community. It's very diverse from a businesses and providers, as AT&T is, to end users and consumers, to non-governmental organizations, and to governments themselves. So it's complicated to think of internet governance because it's not a traditional regulatory or governance structure. It's really a multifaceted set of participants. And then you get into the substantive issues that can come up with internet governance. And as Roger said, it can be everything from the resources that are used in the internet to the social and policy implications of the internet, everything from online safety to privacy, very significant issues. So all of these are critical to AT&T's business, first as a provider of a global internet, as a global internet company. We have consumer and business customers who rely on the internet every day. And then as a large business ourselves, obviously we are ever increasingly dependent on the internet. So this is very near and dear to our heart, the issue of internet governance. And I want to focus on how AT&T participates in the Internet Governance Forum and in ICANN as examples of, I think, our main activity in this area. And I think it helps to maybe illustrate some of the broader issues around internet governance. So as Roger said, the Internet Governance Forum was created by the UN, but it's a very unique forum because it's created as a truly multi-stakeholder opportunity and meeting to get together and discuss internet policy issues, where as business we come into the meeting on equal footing with governments, Everton and others, and non-governmental organizations, civil society and groups, and we talk about major policy issues that can affect the future of the internet. And we also share best practices and information on things like expanding the reach of the internet, the accessibility of the internet. So I think it plays a dual role in providing a very unique forum for trying to get together and find solutions and common ground on emerging policy issues. And there are a lot of very complicated ones. And as I said, some of the big ones are privacy, online safety, cybersecurity, and those types of things. But also, just to get together as the internet community and to focus on finding solutions to things that we all agree on. How do we expand access to the internet to those who don't have it? How do we make it more accessible to those in other languages? And I think we are now just had the third Internet Governance Forum meeting, and I think there has been an evolution of the process as it started to become more established of taking root and really leading to more of an ongoing discussion during the year, which I think is an important part of establishing this forum as as a more permanent type of structure. I think what we've seen is dynamic coalitions and regional internet governance meetings start to happen during the year, which I think is a good sign that this is encouraging a healthy dialogue between the various internet community stakeholders to address these issues in a more consistent way and not just have it be a once-a-year gathering. So that's the Internet Governance Forum, and AT&T participates in that, and I think we've seen that on a lot of these issues, there are counterbalancing policy interests. So, you know, online safety is a very important issue, but so is freedom of expression and privacy and those types of things. And really, by getting down to specific issues and solutions, I think we find that we can make a lot of progress on these issues. We all have a common interest and desire to make the Internet a healthy, robust platform that it has been, as well as innovative and not letting it get locked down into a, you know, rigid structure where it's going to hold back the development of the Internet, while recognizing that it does have an enormous social and societal impact that needs to be addressed. The role of ICANN, I think, is much more specific but also very important. As Roger said, the domain name, the allocation of domain names and Internet addresses is fundamental to the infrastructure of the Internet. And ICANN has been a private sector-led organization with input and from the community, including governments and non-governmental organizations as well. And then even within the business community, you have business users such as AT&T, and then you have the companies that actually have the business of selling the domain names. So there are a lot of parties at the table, and that can complicate things at ICANN. And right now, ICANN has been looking at ways to improve institutional stability and confidence, I think is how it framed it, and AT&T participated in that proceeding. And I think what we said there is because of the diversity of viewpoints and the unique structure of ICANN, it's very important to have a very transparent and accountable process. So when you have this many different parties at the table and you're making concrete decisions about resources that are going to be used by the community, you know, it's very important to have everyone be aware of the decision-making, have an opportunity to provide input, and then have accountability in the decision-making. And ICANN has been asking questions about ways to do that. We also think having stability is a hugely important issue. And we have, you know, we have felt that with the structure of ICANN the way it has been, where there is the agreement with the Department of Commerce, we've had that stability, and we think it's very important to see that going forward. We would think that one of the main objectives of ICANN is to remain in its current form, is to address concerns about capture, either externally or internally. So those are the types of issues that you can get with Internet governance when you have such a diverse group of stakeholders and parties coming together in a way where it is not a top-down command and control type environment, but a bottoms-up policy development or allocating resources type of thing. But I think, you know, the main benefit of this approach is that it really reflects the way that the Internet itself works. So the Internet itself is bottoms-up and organic, and I think the Internet governance structures have to be that way as well. The Internet is very rapidly changing and flexible, and I think Internet governance needs to be that way as well. And then the Internet itself is transformational. The sum is greater than the whole of its parts. And I think that, likewise, is the way that Internet governance needs to be managed. By bringing everyone together to address these issues, we really can create solutions that are better than if any one part of the community was making decisions about the Internet. So,
thank you, Jeff. Steve?
Thanks, Roger. And in becoming an ICANN insider, like a lot of you over the past 5 years, I think I've learned what it must have felt like for Alice when she was learning how to live in Wonderland. And you learn the rules, which is to run like the wind just to stay where you are and always speak in riddles. Never really say what you mean, but always speak in riddles. But so to try to make it plain to the target audience, let me try it this way. We take the domain name system for granted because it is vital but invisible. It just works. But I'm here to tell you it is also vulnerable. We all know it's vulnerable to what? To criminals who want to use the anonymity and reach of the Internet to perpetrate fraud and crime. We know that. It might even be vulnerable to other governments that would want to do your government harm. But it's also vulnerable and more vulnerable if we decide to stretch and expand it in certain ways that undermine stability and security. One of those ways Jeff talked about briefly, which is the notion currently a hot topic at ICANN, which is expansion of these top-level domains to include hundreds or perhaps several hundred more. Now, the executive branch has been all over this particular topic with consent of the Obama administration transition team, and actually came up with some very hard-hitting comments that I know have been keeping Paul up late at night. They submitted them just before Christmas. And they're really focusing on this question about whether and how and in what manner we're going to launch hundreds of brand new domains. Because as Jeff indicated, it creates issues for a company, but frankly, a company like eBay, one of my members, owns 10 or 15,000 domain names. They basically own all the domain names that have EBAY in them, except for ChesapeakeBay.com. And they have to own them, right? So that what? So that fraudsters can't own them and use them to do phishing attacks on PayPal and eBay customers and try to fool people into thinking it's an eBay business. Well, if we launch hundreds of new domains, think about the prospect of my members having to buy, again, several thousand EBAY names in every one of those domains. That's not going to fly. That can't be the fundamental business plan behind the reason why we need to do a lot of domains. This stuff is important. And it's important enough that Congress, this is the Congressional Internet Caucus, so I think it's the appropriate audience to bring that up, that Congress ought to take a look at it too. Congress has looked at ICANN and issues like this before, held hearings in House Small Business and House Commerce in the last Congress, also Senate Commerce, and there was a House-Senate joint resolution a couple of years ago with regard to the UN and what they were doing with the Tunis agenda. And Ambassador David Gross is in the back. I think you were in Tunis, and that was the weekend you lost your hair. Was on that the very project. But on this issue. Well, in the next few months, I would make the proposition to you that Congress ought to take a hard look at just two questions in a hearing or two over the next couple of months. First question, what's ICANN going to do regarding serious concerns it's hearing about the launch of lots of new top-level domains? Second question, how is ICANN going to work after it transitions away from the current partnership relationship with the U.S. government from where it came? So the first question, I said that ICANN has heard concerns from consumer brand companies, financial services companies, companies like AT&T, and financial services companies that are still in business, about ways to protect their customers from fraud and phishing. And I see this, I don't see this so much as about a complaint about ICANN, but it's more of a challenge to ICANN to try to get this top-level domains story right. Now, a lot of us in the business world feel a lot of tough love for ICANN. Because we love, you got to love the model of private sector management. Especially have to love it in a situation where all of the connections, all of the content, and all the commerce are created by the private sector. So private sector ought to be the leader of it.
Is this the people we embrace?
This is the love part.
This is the love part.
Now the tough part, right, Jeff, the tough part is asking whether ICANN's management is really being responsive and accountable to the private sector, particularly with respect to the concerns we're raising. So I wrote about this in a blog I did last week, and the ICANN general manager of public participation was blogging in the way we all blog, and he basically kind of minimized the concerns of the U.S. government, saying, look, it's really just representing the interests of business. And, well, that's just one stakeholder. We're not really worried about one stakeholder, because as Jeff indicated, it's a multi-stakeholder world. But, you know, I'm here to say that that one stakeholder is a big stakeholder when it comes to making the Internet work today. And, frankly, the business community starts to feel like the corpse at a wake, right? Everybody expects you to be there, but nobody expects you to actually say anything. But we're not going to be so quiet. Thankfully, the U.S. Commerce Department considers the concerns of business. It's, after all, it's called the Commerce Department. But what happens when commerce loses its joint partnership with ICANN that it enjoys today? And that brings me to the second question I would propose that Congress would look at in the first half of the year. And that has to do with our relationship with ICANN. Last October, ICANN held a very well-attended public participation meeting over at the Press Club. And it was to talk about improving institutional confidence. Jeff brought that up. And the chairman of ICANN said, look, the joint project agreement concludes in September of 2009. This is a legal fact. And the date of expiration of the agreement, it's in there. It's not in anybody's declared it or canceled it. It was just set up to expire in September of 2009. Accomplished fact. Anxious to see what Paul says about that. But frankly, it's like my teenage son telling me that parental oversight is due to expire when I turn 18, and he does. He turns 18 in May. When he turns 18,
good luck with that.
Right, at which point He assumes full management of his bedroom, company, family car, credit cards, and everything else, whether I like it or not, and whether he's ready or not. And I think that once the JPA, this joint partnership agreement with ICANN, once it's gone, once it expires, Commerce will no longer be the firewall that it is today. Commerce Department won't be a firewall between ICANN and basically a lot of other government regulators, both U.S. and international. Our Justice Department, for instance, sent a letter in. I'll just wrap this up. Sent a letter in to ICANN as well, and raising a lot of concerns, and Paul might speak about those, but frankly, the Justice Department letter is just a taste of what ICANN can expect once the Commerce Department steps out of that firewall role. You'll hear the FTC and 50 state AGs, consumer protection bureaus, other governments around the world and their consumer protection bureaus will feel a little freer to go after ICANN and regulate the activity that ICANN actually performs, because they don't really view the Commerce Department as providing that oversight. So let me do it in closing that the goal of computer science is to build something that actually lasts, well, at least until you've fixed all the bugs. And frankly, I think that ICANN, we have to ask the same question. Computer scientists designed the Internet and they designed ICANN. So it's no surprise that after 10 years of being in business, it's appropriate to ask whether ICANN itself can last until we figure out how to get the bugs out of Internet governance. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Paul.
Yeah, thanks. Roger, and at the outset, let me express my concern and alarm at describing me as distinguished, because at least in my case, it can only mean that the gray hair is taking over from the mousy brown. So it is? Yeah. Okay. I'm really grateful for this opportunity to speak to you, and really grateful to the Internet Caucus for putting on this forum, because really, in spite of the fact that we are a talking shop, and we've been a talking shop and a policy shop for 10 years, the opportunities for dialogue are always welcome, so I really appreciate it. I want to kick off by stealing a quote from Woody Allen, who said about this town something to the effect of, it really values sincerity, openness, and facts. And if you can fake those things, you'll do really, really well in the town. I say that because I want to kick off with some facts. I think it's really informative to go back over the last 10 years of growth since ICANN's been born. Back in 1998, there were about 30 million computers on the Internet. Now there's about 500 million servers. That doesn't include, you know, sort of episodically connected laptops, digital assistants, and other devices that we're familiar with. Back in 1998, there were 70 million users. Now we're approaching 1.5 billion globally, and that's growing rapidly. Excuse me. So far, 578 million people are online in Asia. That represents 15% of the total population of that region, only 15%. Similarly, 51 million are online in Africa, and that's only 5%. But it represents 1,000% growth just in 8 years. Now, contrast that with 250 million who are online in North America, and that represents 73% of the population. When you hear those figures, you start to realise that globally, something that we've been familiar with for 10 years is not a static phenomenon at all, and in fact, in most parts of the world, is still in its infancy. Let me talk specifically about domain names for a moment and the growth in those. Number of registered domain names in 1999 was just under 40 million. Now the number of registrations is about 180 million. The number of registrars, that is, as Roger explained earlier, those retailing the domain names, in 1999 was about 100, and now we have about 945. So a huge growth there. Excuse me. But the killer fact for me has been domain name registration, which in 1999 was about $70 a pop to register a domain name. Now it's about $6. Somewhere between $6 and $7. And then wrapping all of that, by some reports we've got about $3.5 trillion worth of e-commerce being done on the Internet. So I mentioned those statistics, as I said, because in addition to demonstrating dramatic growth, what's been the foundation for those things? It's been the internet. But what's been the foundation for our approach to that internet? It's been a coordinated approach. For the last 10 years, we've had a consistent approach to coordinating that resource. And that consistent approach has been supplied through ICANN and through its participants. And as the speakers before me have sort of noted, when we talk about participants, it is an enormously broad church. Everyone from business through to engineers, through to government organisations. And on that government advisory committee, it's worth noting that there's about 120 governments represented. ICANN's mission, related to that foundation that I was talking about and that approach to coordination, is to keep secure and stable the internet's unique identifiers. As I said, it's been doing that for 10 years, and it's been doing that under the stewardship of an MOU process, a Memorandum of Understanding process, with the Department of Commerce. There's been 7 of those MOUs, with 13 report cards on our progress. But over time, and this is the proposition that I want to put to you, Roger was keen for us to put a proposition on the table and then get to the discussion. And this is a mixture of professional and personal reflection. Over time, I think we've been misled by some of the language that we use. Transition, independence, conclusion, they're all language of movement and separation. Whereas the JPA and the MOU process, the JPA being the latest iteration of the Memorandum of Understanding, is all about delivery and creating permanence. It's been about that since day one. So we're not transiting somewhere. We're not seeking independence. We're not the 18-year-old looking to get out of home. We are already independent. We're already an independent organisation. We're not concluding any relationship. In fact, they'll be unaffected or improved. How so? How could they be improved after the JPA? Well, I think that because the JPA, as a form of political oversight, has started to become a political destabiliser in some quarters. Internationally, we have people who like the model, but who after 10 years look at the JPA and say, when it is renewed every 3 years, as it has been over the last 10, they say to themselves, A, is there really the confidence in this model that everyone purports there to be? And secondly, is there is the model actually going to deliver on its promise? Isn't it time to conclude that? And the reason they're saying that, I suspect, is that particularly people who are more interested in control than coordination. Every time this JPA or this MOU process is renewed, it provides an opportunity or an excuse for them to be able to raise the prospect of control or, at worst, the prospect of an alternate route, a second internet. It's not in any business's interest to allow that debate to perpetuate itself. And that's what happens every time we renew this. Every time we provide an opportunity for a lack of confidence. In answer to Steve, I'm conscious that Roger's asked us to not respond until all of us have finished, but it's...
And to keep your comments to about 5 minutes.
Right, and I'm now running over, am I? A gentle hint. I would argue that we're not going anywhere. We're staying exactly where we are. The model works. It's been demonstrated to work. It's been a foundation for growth. And so, therefore, we need to take the opportunity to cement that in place, not question it again.
Thank you, Paul. Everton.
Thank you, Roger. Good morning to everyone. First of all, I'd like to thank very much the invitation and the opportunity for being here, being a representative of another government. And I am indeed the testimony of the openness and the interest of this Internet Caucus Forum on different perspectives And perhaps my intention here is precisely to add a perspective from another government to this debate, which is indeed interesting. Besides being here at the Embassy of Brazil, I am also the Brazilian representative to the Government Advisory Committee of ICANN. I've been there since 2006, and I presently hold the position of vice chairman of that committee. My proposition to our debate is that ICANN needs to go international. There are many arguments that I could use to justify that proposition. I chose one that is more related to the interest of particular governments that are involved in the public policy debate about their own country code top-level domain, in case Brazil as .pr is under our purview. The argument that I want to bring about starts by a quote from the Tunis agenda that was mentioned by Roger in the beginning that says, countries should not be involved in decisions regarding another country's country code top-level domain. In Brazil, it means that every country will manage, will create the structure that it finds more appropriate to rule that particular top-level domain. In Brazil, we opted for the creation of a multi-stakeholder committee, an internet steering committee, very much inspired by ICANN and by the multi-stakeholder spirit of the WISIS, the Summit on Information Society. That's not an organization. It's just a committee, it's comprised with representatives elected from different sectors of society, civil society, private sector, university, and also government representatives. Those are not elected, they are nominated, but there is a balance among them so that it will reflect the basic balance of interests at national level on internet issues. And the day-to-day management of the .br issues continues to be under a not-for-profit organization, which is NIC.br, under the general overview of this committee that I referred to. Now, one of the ICANN objectives is to have agreements or contracts with each operator of country code top-level domains. And many countries, including my own, are reluctant to engage into contracts with ICANN, and operators are reluctant. Some Paul might have more precise data, but I know that there is not a very large number of operators of CCTLDs that have so far engaged in contracts with ICANN, and there might be reasons for that. And one of the reasons that I would like to point out is that by being a California-based corporation, ICANN is ultimately accountable to the laws and courts of the state of California. That's where the ultimate accountability reaches its limit. And, by saying that, I do not want you to misinterpret me. I do not want to state that there is any kind of mistrust in the Californian courts. On the contrary, I just would like to emphasize that by being subject to one particular jurisdiction, we already have here a contradiction with that Tunis principle that I mentioned, that countries should not be involved in decisions regarding another country's. Moreover, the link between ICANN's decisions regarding changes to the root zone file, for instance, and the Department of Commerce, that is the IANA function, and the need for the Department of Commerce to approve each and every decision, when it refers to other countries' top-level domains, like my own, like .br, it seems that there is the need of approval from the government of the United States, which is also not totally in accordance with that principle, again. So it is our interest to collaborate within the framework of ICANN, of which we are very supportive and very active indeed, in order to make some changes and adaptations in this model, in order that this kind of concern to us is well addressed. So our suggestion is that ICANN is in a position now, is in a moment that allows itself to take that bold step of going international. But by going international, I do not mean creating a traditional UN-style intergovernmental organization. And also, I do not mean subordinating ICANN to any existing organization like ITU or any other else who would be willing to include in its mandate what ICANN is doing presently. No, as I said, we believe in the multi-stakeholder model because multi-stakeholderism is one of the principles embodied at the World Summit on Information Society. And I think that there is room to keep that model, but we need to have it as a truly international level. There has to be a recognition at the global level that ICANN is international for the purpose of dealing precisely with those country code top-level domains. And in for that case, that there should be no subordination of ICANN to any particular country or any jurisdiction. I think we all recognize and we are thankful for the U.S. fundamental role and leadership in promoting internet technology. I think without the efforts and the support of the Department of Defense and of the National Science Foundation, we never have this tremendously important technology for our economy and our lives today. Okay, sorry, I'm just finishing. And when it comes to ICANN, I think there is a question here that we need to address. That is a question of legitimacy and representation in decision-making process. And considering the facts that Paul presented about the worldwide growth of the internet, collaboration that includes other regions, other countries of the world, in particular developing countries, is fundamental in this regard. Thank you. I'm sorry if I extended.
No, thank you very much. And as I explained a moment ago, what I'd like to do is give the panelists an opportunity to ask questions of each other. We will then open it up to the audience. To save time, let me explain. If you have a question, I would ask you to come up to the microphone and clearly and fully introduce yourself, your name, and any affiliation you have. But let's begin with the panelists. If any of you would like to comment on or ask questions of each other, this is a good opportunity to do so. Steve, I guess you're the first one.
Right, first.
I can go first.
Okay.
Okay.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Just go ahead. I guess I just wanted to comment on I do think the role of government is one of the most important internet governance issues. And I think the comments of all of us here, including Everton and Paul, highlight some of the issues and challenges that we have. So, for example, the role of the U.S. government in ICANN has been a source of concern globally with some countries. I think, likewise, though, AT&T, we are concerned about if you remove the role of the U.S. government from ICANN, will that change? Will it be, as Paul said, that they're already independent, nothing's going to change, we're going to stay that way? Or, you know, will the U.S. government role be replaced by some other different government role? And I think that's the concerns that we have. So those are the types of issues. Yes, that change has to – we have to know where we're going in order to support change from where we are and know that it's going to preserve, as Paul said, if we think that today it's independent, it's working, then know that that's what we're going to have at the end of the process. And then I just wanted to make a quick point. We talked a lot about business interests up here, but the domain names and the issues we're talking about really hit to every user of the Internet. And if you think about all of us as you go onto the Internet, if you're going to sites that don't have a – actual website there, I think it's in all of our interest, and obviously all of our intent is to make the internet work as well as possible and not have it be a place where you're getting into sites that are trying to rip you off or just be dead ends. So I do think, but we need to keep in mind the ultimate consumer interest and user interest of what we're talking about.
So. Steve? Thanks. Again, I ask the panelists to keep your comments brief so that we can get time for the audience. Go ahead.
Sure. I'll just try to respond to Everton, who deserves a lot of credit for rolling up his sleeves and getting involved at ICANN and IGF. He's one of the government representatives that gets it and shows up and does the work. And yet, I think you're articulating concerns that other governments have said it well, very uncomfortable with the California corporation issue. And Everton made 2 points, and I'd like to propose a question back to Everton. Said it doesn't like that it's subject to one jurisdiction, whether it's California or not, it's one jurisdiction. But here's the news, is that outside of governments, the private sector and all the GTLDs, we operate on contracts. We do contracts with ICANN to run the services of making the Internet work. And contracts don't always, well, work out nicely. Sometimes there's disputes, and those disputes end up in courts. So there is going to have to be some designation of jurisdictions when it comes to contracts. The second thing Everton's concerned about is having somebody's commerce department, whether it's us or not, somebody's technology geeks, figuring out whether a change or a new record gets into the root. And that, unfortunately, is necessary, too, to ensure security and stability of the Internet. You don't just willy-nilly throw a new row and a new TLD into the root, and you don't just change the IP address without ensuring it's going to work to the preservation of security and stability. So I don't know how we solve that if Everton, you get what you want in terms of transitioning ICANN to a truly international level, because we still have contracts that have to be adjudicated, and we still want to ensure security and stability when you put it in the root. So here's my proposal. Everton, why not split the baby? Why not let the governments, who don't want to let other people tell them what to do, let the governments and their country code TLDs, .br and .us, why not leave ICANN and just roll up under the ITU, which is a treaty-based organization under the UN, and then let us in the private sector, we get Paul. We get ICANN, right? Because we're all about contracts. And we know how to deal with
Paul. What a dumb deal.
What a dumb deal. I mean, so we split the route, and the good news is that you'll wake up tomorrow morning and all of your ISPs, Cox and Comcast and AT&T, they'll just pick up 200 rows from the ITU, Everton's group, and they'll pick up 40 or 50 rows from Paul and glue them together, and then the DNS will work. It may not, you know, it may create some new risks, but it could work. And if we can't reconcile the interests of governments and private sector, why not split and coexist peaceably?
Okay. Paul, did you have any follow-up comments you want to make?
Well, I do, lots, but I'm just wondering...
any comments you want to make briefly so that we have time for
that? Yeah, I'll try and make them real brief. Firstly, to Jeff, you know, will the USG role be replaced? Answer, no. No. There's not many other ways of saying it. No. It won't be. Steve, yeah, I hear what you're saying about, you know, it's a model that had engineers involved in it and they invented it. Lots of other people were involved in inventing it as well. Politicians, governments, rightly so, individual users, individual people who had concerns. If I think the analogy would work brilliantly if we were all machines. We're never going to perfect this model. That's not the point. The point of the model is to have multi-stakeholder dialogue. It is always going to be messy. It's always going to be difficult. You will never achieve nirvana with this. Very quickly, that's the JPA, for those who have not seen it. Slender document, isn't it? It's got 10 principles in it, all of which I would describe, and I've heard my colleague here describe, as meat and potatoes. What does that mean? It means that they're the sorts of things you would expect an organisation like this to do. They are not rocket science. They are not things that you would, frankly, on some of them, they're not things you would ever see us want to proclaim victory on. You would never want to say, oh, we got security right. Oh, well, that's fixed. Tick.
Check the box.
We got transparency right. Tick. You'd never want, I could go through and bore you with all 10, but I won't. So that's in answer to that position. On the last point that you've made, and I'll let Everton talk more comprehensively if he wants to, but I would have thought there was huge risks in playing with the model of that kind and would be hugely destabilising for business. Business is now used to this model. I just think there are gigantic risks in separating that model out. And a very final point, Roger, I'm sorry, I'll keep it really short. You know as well as I do that we're not blithely throwing things into the root, not thinking about it. This is a process that's gone for 10 years. It's been very thoughtful, in detail for the last 3 to 4. Are there problems with it that yet to be resolved? Absolutely. And we're committed to that.
Everton, brief comments, please.
Very briefly. Well, in fact, I agree with Paul. I mean that I just wonder how come someone at and where someone would be able to glue these inputs together from different structures, I think it may have a tremendous risk, and we should strive to avoid splitting the DNS. I mean, we need to work on improving participation, improving input into decision making. We need to work better on the roles, including roles of government, which is a valid point that was raised here. The governments do have a role, yes, they do, and we need to further discuss that. The private sector has a role to play as well, though I think it's misleading to say that ICANN should be a private sector-led institution, because it is a multi-stakeholder. So if you center on private sector only, you are forgetting the civil society, you are forgetting the users, the non-commercial users, you are forgetting the academy, you are forgetting the governments. Okay, thank you.
Thank you all, and we have a few minutes left, so why don't I ask, again, please introduce yourself and pose a question to the panel or panelists.
Thank you, Roger. Philip Corwin, on behalf of the Internet Commerce Association, representing domain name investors and developers. My question is for Paul. Our organization and our comments on the new GTLD, I think if we had one big message, it's that it was that it's more important to do this right than to do it quickly. And there is concern because of the comments posted at the Circle ID website by Kieran McCarthy that ICANN is being somewhat dismissive of the 300-plus very extensive, very well-considered comments on all kinds of substantive issues. But I think beyond that, there's a question of just managing this process. ICANN has talked about getting 500 applications in the first round when we only have 21 GTLDs. Now, those 500 applications would bring in application fees equal to 150% of your annual operating budget. So just on managing the review of the applications, there's concern. So my question is ICANN going to slow this process down? And I think the best way would be to delay publication of the second version of the applicant guidebook until you've engaged in constructive dialogue with the community at the upcoming meeting in Mexico City in early March, or are you going to just stick hard and fast to this schedule of starting to accept applications mid-summer, which frankly would set off a storm of controversy just 2 months before the U.S. has to announce its decision regarding continuation or termination of oversight?
I assume that's directed to Paul.
To Paul, yeah. But I welcome follow-up by anyone else.
Sure. So, Phil, the bottom line is we're going to address all of the concerns that were expressed. We don't take them lightly. I'm amazed that posting to a blog has set off such controversy, particularly in the online world that we all live. We all know what blogging is like. It's conversational. It doesn't necessarily represent the views of an organisation. And in this case,
Mr. McCarthy is
sure,
prominent your organisation in communications.
As I said, the bottom line is I issued a note last Friday, I think it was, that clarified that, which I hope you would have seen, which said that we will consider all of these before going live. I'm not going to arbitrarily say, hey, we're going to throw that timetable out the window, because one of the things we get criticised for is arbitrariness. So people want certainty. Now, having said that, will it take us some time to digest and to provide a proper analysis of those 310 comments, I think it was 314 comments? Yes. And we'll be doing every one of those people who've submitted comments the right of providing them with a proper analysis of their comments as to how we'll consider those, whether or not they'll be whether or not they'll produce changes in the book, the second iteration of this book, or whether they won't. But you're right, your top line message, important to get this right. That's our primary concern as well.
Thank you.
I think Steve had a brief comment.
Thanks, and thanks for the question, Phil. And I'm actually going to defend Paul on this one. I really have confidence that ICANN, under Paul's lead, will actually respond to all 300 comments carefully, and they may even change the time scale of when they're going to launch it, because they're very sensitive to being seen as doing TLDs right, particularly in the year when the JPA terminates, right? It's not a good time to go through a process that goes poorly, because then it sort of undermines the case that the organization is mature enough to be fully independent. But I'm confident that they're going to do a good job responding to the comments. But I don't think we should just think that delay is the thing to do. You see, a big chunk of population doesn't use the internet yet. There's only 1 billion people using the internet out of 5 billion. Pulse gave us a statistic that in Asia, 15% are online. Well, that means that 85% are not online in Asia. That's a lot of people. And one of the reasons they're not online is they can't type email addresses, they can't type domain names in their own scripts. Sorry, can't do it until we implement IDN. So I love the idea of a delay on some of the more controversial generic TLDs, but let's go as fast as we can on the internationalized domain names to help that 85% of Asia that can't get on the internet today.
Can I just want to add very quickly, Paul, I do appreciate your comments because, as you said, this is going to be a messy process, and that the domain names is an example of the challenging substantive areas you can get into. But I think having the community feel like they have an opportunity to provide input and to have those be responded to, I think especially on these types of challenging issues, is very important to companies like AT&T, and I do appreciate your comments for that reason.
Mm-hmm. David, please introduce yourself and direct a question to one or
David
more panelists.
I'm David Maher, Senior Vice President of .org, the Public Interest Registry. My question directed to Paul. Could you spell out a little more in detail how you perceive U.S. government's role, assuming that the JPA will terminate in September?
Sure. So the IANA contract remains in place. The U.S. is still a active key participant on the GAC, the Governmental Advisory Committee. They still, given all of the, you know, when you've walked hand in hand with a friend and then you let go of each other's hands, doesn't mean you're not friends anymore. They will continue to provide expertise and insight to us. They'll be a touchstone for us. We're incorporated in California, and notwithstanding the discussion that's taking place about internationalization, that represents a discussion about an additional legal personality, not an alternative additional legal personality. So our chairman's on record as saying, both our previous chairman and our current chairman are on record as saying that we will not leave the states. We're incorporated here. We've got 501(c) not-for-profit status. We can't give that up because that fundamentally challenges the nature of the organisation. So for all those reasons, I mean, heavens above, we've just established an office in Washington. If that doesn't send a message that we're prepared, that we are wanting to remain committed to, you know, the sources of energy and investment that built the internet and this model, then I'm not sure what does.
Quickly, you were about to conclude, so any of the panelists have concluding comments, please make them now. Everton? No.
I would just add to that one is that the U.S. government comments that came in on this most recent round of the generic top-level domains, they were filed by executive branch, which includes DHS and Commerce and Justice Department, talking about pricing. Those comments were filed through the multi-stakeholder public participation window. They went in through the regular process that all governments file comments on. There was no special privilege or pipeline asserted by the U.S. government by virtue of its legacy role in ICANN. So I hope nothing about that would change in a post-JPA world, that governments of Brazil representing your businesses and consumers and U.S. government would all feel free to let their opinions be known. Governments are going to play a role, and the JPA doesn't actually create any special role for the U.S. government in that regard today.
Any other concluding comments? If not, let me take this opportunity to thank all of you for joining us, and please join me with a round of applause for our panelists and their conversation.